listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net. Oh, my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
West Bromwich Albion finally have a new boss after weeks of dealing with Keith Downing as their caretaker manager. The Midlanders have finally brought in Pepe Mel, former Real Betis manager, to come in and restructure and rebuild the Baggies season. Bayern are giving back. If the silverware wasn't enough, the grand new stadium that was built not so long ago, and of course all the glorious victories from this season, they are now paying their fans to travel to Champions League football, as they're willing to bring the cost down of their fans' tickets for their Arsenal encounter in the Champions League from €75 to €45. Bayern proving once again that German football is ahead of the curve. And the figures are confirmed for both moves of Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley to Toronto. Details coming in today's show. Welcome to World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the views from around the world of football. Major League Soccer fans are still reeling from the news that Toronto have picked up Tottenham Hotspur's Jermaine Defoe and Michael Bradley, and those moves have been confirmed by Tottenham and Roma in the last 24 hours or so. Roma putting out a wonderful thing on their Twitter site as saying thank you very much to Michael Bradley. We'll talk about Bradley's move in a little bit. Jermaine Defoe will be staying at Tottenham until February the 28th before his trip to the north of America up to Toronto. He's been kept there as backup for Tim Sherwood's strikers until the last possible moment. Defoe won't be moving until the 28th, but the contract and everything has been signed between those clubs. There's something that I want to touch onto straight away earlier on in the show today. Obviously, Pepe Mel becoming the new Baggies boss is quite a big deal. We'll touch on that later on, probably when we play a little bit of IKTS. But I want to talk about, and I know they've been dominating our headlines a lot this week, and it won't be the last time we probably mentioned them today. Well, it definitely won't be. But I want to talk to them something about that we put on Twitter the other night. The Sun's front page from yesterday showed Chris Smalling wearing a suicide bomber dress up gear for a party that he went to. Now, if United couldn't get lower in the Premier League table, they can certainly get lower in terms of what the media is saying about them. Smalling, a player that is underperforming to what is expected of him time and time again this season, is now underperforming as a moral human being by wearing a suicide bomber outfit to a fancy dress party. Now, Smalling has apologised as soon as these pictures came out, released over the internet on his girlfriend's Instagram or some other social networking site that isn't Twitter, and therefore I'm not really involved in. I only tweet on Facebook. I don't really mess around too much with the other ones because, to be honest, they all just do the same thing. You post a picture, your friends can see it, or anybody can see it, either or, yada yada. Anyway, but Smalling has apologised immediately that the night before the paper launched, saying he went as a Jaeger bomber. Now, obviously, those of you who maybe don't go out and drink or don't know what a Jaeger bomb is, and I'm probably preaching to very few of you that don't know what a Jaeger bomb is, because it's a very common drink. You take a glass of Red Bull, you take a shot of Jaeger, you drop the Jaeger in it, and then you down the whole glass. Jaeger bomb. and Smalling trying to make his fancy dress costume play on words, but for somebody who is so smart, and I mean Chris Smalling is, you know, a smarter footballer than most others. He actually had a place lined up at Loughborough University here in the UK to study financial economics. He's got A-levels in business studies, economics, media and maths. Yet, even he was foolish enough as a young person with plenty of money to be going around and going around dressed up in something that made him look like a suicide bomber. It was tasteless, it was tacky, and it's causing a massive unnecessary headache for David Moyes. Just more piles of pressure added onto the United manager, and I'm afraid it's a nightmare for him. You've got to be thinking, when you're at Manchester United, if you're an underperforming player in a side that's drastically underperforming this season, you know that your every move on and off the pitch is going to be scrutinised in the modern day world. Now, Smalling's got agents, he's got friends. Would they not have turned around and thought, mate, everyone is going to be looking at you, there are going to be pictures of this on the internet, on social media, I wouldn't wear that if I were you. You know, I've been on bad taste social dress-ups before, and I've seen some people wear very tasteless costumes. But they're lucky enough, they're not in the media, that, you know, as long as the pictures don't get given to anybody or anything like that, they're not going to end up getting kind of accused or accosted of anything. Instead, Chris Smalling, somebody who is going to be in the media spotlight, decides to wear this, as I say, just stupidity. How stupid can footballers get? Especially when you're a footballer who's under pressure and performing extremely badly in the Premier League and at your job. If you're doing badly at your job, you better make sure that everything else is going right in your world. Pretty much the advice that I would give to any footballer. So your thoughts on Chris Smalling? We had some of them come through on Twitter. Some people tweeted back to us saying that they thought it was hilarious and great jokes. And I was just, you know, it's tasteless, mate. It's really tasteless what Smalling did. But let us know your thoughts. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, the Facebook page as well. We've been tweeting a lot over this week, but let's get some of the emails. A couple come in from, one's come in from Jay Clote. It's a very long email. And one of it's about John Charles, because Rafa was trying to test me on John Charles and Stanley Matthews the other day. And was asking me, so do you know who these people are? And I was able to pick them out. You know, I got him sorted. So I wasn't going to mess around with Rafa trying to catch me off guard earlier on in the week. But Juve J's got in contact with us because John Charles, obviously an ex-Juventus player. He says, "Hi guys, I've only been a Juvento for 10 years, so I don't always know about all the club's history. Your comments about John led me to do research on him. He played for Juventus for 5 seasons in the 50s and 60s. He was capocannoniere, the leading scorer in Serie A, his first season. His Juventus sides won 3 Scudetti and 2 Italian Cups in 5 years. In his career, he was never booked, earning him the nickname the Gentle Giant in Italy. He made such an impression on the Italian game that in 1997, 34 years after he left Italy, he was voted the best foreign player to play for Juventus. In a separate poll that same year, he was voted the greatest foreign player to play in Serie A ahead of Maradona, Platini and Zinedine Zidane. Thanks for the opportunity to learn something new about the history of my favourite club." We were also talking about the Qatar World Cup and Rafa said the Olympics, you know, would they be moved if they couldn't be held in the summer, etc. And Jay added, yeah, you were talking about the Qatar World Cup and you were wondering if they would move the summer Olympics. Not only would they move the Olympics, they have. In 1956, the Melbourne Olympics was held from November 22nd to December 8th in Australia's summer. The Sydney Olympics were held in the early spring instead of the summer as a concession, but it was still end of September through the beginning of October. I can guarantee you that if Santiago, Chile, Mendoza, Argentina, or Christchurch, New Zealand got the Winter Olympics, they would hold it in August, from Juve J. Well, I guarantee that would happen as well, to be honest, Jay, with the Winter Olympics, because you're kind of relying on snow to help you out with that one. We've also got a couple more emails we're going to touch on later on in the show. I know Raph wants to bring one or two up. So get on the emails, show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483, the rant line, and the Facebook page as well. Big thanks there to Jay for a couple of fantastic emails that came in. We'll get some more later on in the show, as we will also get to some of your tweets as we continue here on Friday's edition of A World Football Daily. But a man who's going to talk to us now about all things Premier League football, and particularly about his former club, Manchester United. I'm delighted to say joining us on the show today to probably pick apart a bit on Chris Smalling and to maybe give his opinion and thoughts on David Moyes, how he's doing. Is he going to be successful and should they be looking elsewhere? Is it a crisis at United? All of these questions will be asked by a former United great joining me live on the show right now, ready to rock and roll, an ex-Manchester United, Millwall, Derby and Queen's Park Rangers player and a six-time cap winner for England. It's the one, the only, one of our favourite guests to have on the show, Mr. Gordon Hill, joining us here on World Football Daily. Gordon, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, mate. It's been far too long. A very happy new year to you, mate. How are you keeping? Are you all well?
Yes, I'm very well. I'd like to say happy new year to everybody and hope it becomes a really good year for football. As I said, I'm just in the midst of finishing my book off, and it's called Merlin. I'm putting down my memoirs and my stories and winning and losing and crying and the usual stuff. So once I actually finish it, I'll get you guys a copy so that you guys can actually go through it and you can share some of my thoughts, because I've got some great stories in there.
I imagine, Gordon, that it's going to be a fantastic read, that's for sure, and hopefully a little less controversial than Sir Alex Ferguson's book from earlier, from late last year, that's for sure.
Unbelievable. It
was surprising. I mean, were you surprised about, I don't want to go too far back here, but were you surprised about how Ferguson portrayed himself in his most recent book?
Well, to be perfectly honest with you, I was gobsmacked, actually, when it happened, because I didn't think he would. He seemed to preach to the club, which was quite ironic. That he said that everything that happens in the club stays within the club, even the Beckham situation. And then all of a sudden, he's come out and he's had a go at Beckham. Him and Roy Keane seem to be the best of friends, and they're both on their Christmas lists, you know. So it was so funny when all of a sudden, like this come out and stories come out. I would have thought he got so many memories and memoirs that I thought he might have just kept it to himself and said what goes on in football stays in football in those terms. I don't think he needed the money. I don't think he needed the notoriety. I was just like, oh, wow. And I think he just aired a few truths that he had kept up and pented up inside him for some time. And, you know, it was quite eye-opening.
It was a number of people felt that it showed Ferguson to actually be very selfish the way his thoughts came across on paper this time around. And with that said, if people are thinking of Ferguson as a slightly more selfish manager than they had beforehand, is it any surprise that Ferguson left David Moyes with the squad that Moyes has got at the moment without making any changes for the long-term future to assist Moyes in that final year at the club? Because he knew there were players leaving this year, such as Scholes. Yeah. That he never tried to assess and bring in somebody else to replace them maybe last Christmas or the season before or the summer before that. And instead, Moyes has been left, some people are saying, with a very average United side.
We call it high and dry. in the game, I think basically he had 25 years. I think he'd come to a point where, you know, I don't think all's rosy for him to retire. I think there's something behind the scenes that he came very quickly with this. And then all of a sudden, like one day he's here, the next day we've got 25 years of trophies. And then he said, okay, my successor. I mean, we know that David, and I know David very well. And I still say that I'm still behind David. But the question marks are going to be coming up because he's been in there close on 6 months. We've seen some signings that to me have been damaging. I think the Fellaini situation. I wouldn't have bought Fellaini for all the tea in China, because number one is that it's not against Everton supporters at all. But there's a difference between Everton and there's a difference between Manchester United. Man United have been for 25 years picking up European Cups, FA Cups, leagues for 25 years. And that's where the club comes from, that world, that top world. I mean, David in his 11 years picked up virtually nothing and was in the middle there. So him to step up from there to Man United, I think was an absolute giant step. But I don't think he realised how powerful and how big the club is. You know, yeah, you play against them on a Saturday and you think, okay, that's like normal club. But Man United, you have to be the creme de la creme of players or a player to actually get to actually play for Man United. And I mean, that you have to be the best. You've got your Bayern Munichs, you've got your Barcelonas. I mean, they have got the creme de la creme. And you're looking at players now at Man United that were coming to the end of their life cycle in the game, and they were just giving it back. And I think Alex Ferguson knew that. I think what he did, he left him with a side that won the league, but there was a lot of driftwood that needed to be sorted out. And I think David has inherited so much of it that he's getting bogged down with the way he's playing, who he shifts, who he moves, who he goes for. You can't go for anybody at this moment because all the top clubs are not going to let go of their players until they're either out of the Champions League or out of their league domestic. Mm. And if you think about it, Man United can only go for those top players.
Mm.
Because if you think about it, those top players are the only players that really can come to Manchester United and change everything around.
You mentioned obviously Fellaini's not worked out and isn't a Manchester United caliber player. That I think is a very fair comment to make, especially on the performances he's made. But how many of those United players that have been brought on from Ferguson last year? I mean, you read off the names of Johnny Evans, Smalling, and we touched on Chris Smalling and the problems that he's had out of football as well this week in terms of his dress attire, but those sorts of players that we've been told for the last 2 years by Ferguson, by the club, that are going to be some of the best players in United's history, yet that none of them seem to be rising to that level in any way, shape or form at the moment.
I totally agree. I think this is the worst United team I've seen for 25-30 years. I think we've now become a mediocre team with people not scared, not fearing, coming to Old Trafford, taking points off of us. I think what David thought, that he could do what Alex Ferguson did and play around with the team, put players into the team that will get him results. Alex Ferguson did it and got goals in the last couple of minutes of the games. And when he did, they got us results. David can't do that with the players because they're not capable of pulling us out of a 1-0, out of a 2-0, to get back into the game. I mean, a lot of results hinged last year on us getting points in the 90th minute, 89th minute, 92nd minute. So what we can't do this year is we can't get those. We haven't got the caliber of player. We can't keep relying on Rooney. I mean, once you isolate Rooney, the game stops. You've got Van Persie that's injuries, got injuries now. And that's a question mark. You've got you've got Danny Welbeck who sometimes looks as though he's finished product, but he's not a finished product. You've got Smalling, that's got to learn that Man United is Man United. You've got Tom Cleverley. Unfortunately, Tom came onto the scene last year, and I was in England with Tom Cleverley when he was training before they came out on their summer tour to the States. And I said to Tom, I said, what are you doing? He said, well, I've just been called up, so I'm doing some extra training. I said, well, and listen, when you get in there, make sure that you give everything you've got. I said, because if you get the first team, you can't go no higher. Well, what happens? He goes on the tour. He has great tour. Alex starts to play him. He starts playing through the season. Next thing you know, it's an England international. So he's gone 1 year straight in. And now he seems to have had a little bit of a lull in his play. That's our midfield. You've got Carrick that's been injured. And Carrick is a steady Eddie.
Yeah.
And then they try to compliment him. No player is complimenting each other. No player is complimenting each other. They play Valencia. Valencia is the only really what I call an out and out down the line cross the ball. You've got Nani. You've got who should be a winger, Ashley Young, and he's neither here nor there. And what's happening is at the moment it's like a chaos completely in the club to find out what is the best way to play, what is the best system to play, and who is the best to get results. You can't go out against Swansea and think that you can play a second-rate team against Michael Laudrup's team. That's fact. Mm-hmm. Because you look at Michael Laudrup, he loves to attack. What was he? He was an attacking player, great player, loves to use the flanks. He's using the flanks, and what happens is, at the last couple of minutes, we've got, bless his heart, the lad that was injured, the stomach problem.
No, a Fletcher.
And what happens? He gets beat. The guy clips the ball in and says to the centre forward, get on the end of it. 2-1, where normally we would have won 2-1. We're not getting that. So you can't take anybody too lightly, because Tim Sherwood, who's done a great job down at Tottenham, comes up, takes points off of us, and all of us, you come to Old Trafford and take points off of us. And then Sunderland. And all of a sudden you're looking around and saying, whoa, hold on a minute. These guys are fighting for salvation. We're fighting to stay in Europe. We're fighting to get up in the league. And I'm scratching my head every single game, because it seems to be a different formation, a different style, a different player out there. You know, Chicharito, don't know whether he's playing with Kagawa. It's like, wow, really? Is it a toss-up on a Friday to find out who's going to go in the team? You've got flaking legs. You've got Vidic that may not be here. You've got Ferdinand that's obviously going to be moved on. You've got Johnny Evans that's got to come in. And Fergie said it. You're right. Yes, these guys are the next generation. They're not the caliber of generation that we're used to at Old Trafford. They could play anywhere. I mean, people say to me, Gordon, you know, Sunderland. I said, look, Sunderland had two defenders that let go or sold by Man United because they weren't getting in. It's John O'Shea and Wes Brown. I said, and they closed us down. I said, isn't that funny? I said, they spent all their youth and all their younger days and their earlier playing days in our first team. Mm. And they still weren't calibre. So they were moved on. I said, who's replaced them? Are you telling me Small is better than Wes Brown? Are you telling me now that Small is better than John O'Shea? Now all of a sudden you're going to now we've got mediocre players, and if you've got a mediocre player who can't step up, you can't challenge in the Champions League, because that's the only door we've got left open.
And
if we have that left open, we have got to go. We have got to take it. We should have gone out with the strongest team against Swansea, and then let Swansea know we're going to go out the strongest team when we play the Greek team. We have got to go out there, and he's got to go. He's got to give everything he's got to salvage something from this season, because otherwise we're struggling to make Europe. We're out of the FA Cup. With the way that Man City are playing. I mean, so it's not all rosy, but I think it's compiled. I think what he's done is compiled, instead of getting a settled system and a settled team out there to get points, the bread and butter of football is the league. Everything else is jam. I think he's missed the boat on the league. I really do, because that, to me, would have been an absolute... If he gets it right in the league, the cup games will come and they will sit just nicely. But I agree with you. I think that somewhere down the line, Fergie knew what he was doing. Because if you look at all the matches and the way that the games are being played now, you look, they all go to the box. They all look at Fergie. They got the happy people, as I call them. You got Bobby Charlton and Alex Ferguson sitting there. And by God, that don't look good.
Yeah,
it's got to be... They've got to be, it's like somebody looking over your shoulder every 2 seconds just in case you make a mistake. And that's not a way to play. The players aren't playing with any confidence. The players don't know if they're going to play 1 week and not the next week. The players don't know if they're going to go out. And the question I ask is, do they trust each other? Because that comes into the game a lot. If you trust somebody, you'll play with them. If you don't trust somebody in a game of football, you're thinking very carefully, and then doubt creeps in. And of course, we know what's happening in the Premiership at this moment. The Man City are silent assassins at this moment in time. You've got Chelsea there, Mourinho sitting there smiling and as arrogant as ever. You've got Arsene Wenger sitting there saying, good, let it happen to Man United. Because they'll turn around and say, oh, we don't want it to happen. Yeah, right. you've been clawing, trying to get Man United for some years, and now this might be the easiest time to get hold of the points. And that is scary, because at Man United, they are a club that is top draw. They're the world's best, and can't settle for mediocre players and the mediocre performances. And he's got his work cut out, but I think, to be honest, for David Moyes, he's in a circle, he's in the middle of that circle, and he doesn't know which way to turn at times. And that is scary.
Is it that he's going to be stuck in this situation and he won't be able to get out of it, do you think, just finally, Gordon? Because I know we're running out of time and you want to get back to, obviously, your book as well.
No, it's okay. All right.
But do you think it's going to be a case of Moyes can get them out of this situation? It's just going to take a long time, and United fans might have to get used to it as being a mediocre club. Or will there be any salvation at all, do you think, in the second half of the season?
Well, I think number one is that we've got to have patience, because don't forget, you know, you can't cram 25 years into 6 months. But you've got to look at the life and say to yourself, okay, how can we possibly, you know, United supporters are very patient. United supporters are very, very, very demanding, and they're very loyal. What they want now is they might come to the terms that, okay, we're not going to pick up these, and it's a rebuilding process. But how long are they going to wait for this rebuilding process to start taking shape? And I think the second part of the season is going to be the most important part of the season that David Moyes has ever faced. And I'm behind David. You know, I'm saying that, listen, you've got a task and a half. And you've got a task and a half to actually come back and say, listen, yes, okay, we stumbled at the beginning. We know we're out of this. I can't produce what Sir Alex has done at this moment in time. But you know, give me a little bit of patience, and I know the Glazers will give him that patience. I think he will get. I think what it's done. I think he's come from Everton, being very comfortable. He's come to Man United, where it's not comfortable. You have to be winning. It's not an if. You have to be. You have to be up there. You have to be challenging your Chelsea's, your Tottenham's, your Arsenal's, and all these teams that are trying to take you off your throne. I mean, when you get deposed, it's an awful feeling. When you lose and you know that you're in a team that is not, the best team, and you still got to produce what's happened in 25 years of all those great players beforehand, it's a task. It's a mammoth task. And, you know, I don't envy David. I really don't envy him, because if he turns this way and it doesn't go, he's wrong. If he turns that way and he doesn't, he's wrong. You know, he can't win for losing. And you know, patience is something that we've got to sit back. And to be honest, Liverpool's gone through it. We've seen that. Arsenal have gone through it for 7-8 years. It may take a little bit of time. But we're still the number one club in the world, and I think we've got it. And I think the players now have got to believe that and go out there and give it their all, because we can't go into the transfer market at this moment in time, because there's nobody to buy at this moment in time that is the top dogs. Because as I said earlier, those top clubs like the Bayern Munich and those players that are going to be unhappy, they're certainly not going to leave their club to come to a club that's having problems. And it might be Man United, it could be Crystal Palace. They're not going to go to a club that's having problems, because these players, they want first-team football, they want to win honours, and that's it. That's all they want. If they don't get it, they'll move on. And I just hope that some of the players that are out top boys, don't turn around and say thanks very much, but yeah, you might be a name, and name only, but not in the playing side of it. And that would hurt me very much.
I tell you what, Gordon, I'm really glad that at least Derby County are doing okay this season, because your former side United and, of course, Millwall as well, struggling in the Championship. It's not a good time for you to be reflecting on some of your former employers at the moment, is it, mate?
No. I mean, I applied for the Millwall job. I had a nice response from John Berriton about the Millwall situation. I applied for the FC Dallas situation, the job. So I'm very much involved in the game. I still know all about the top players and where the teams are, how it's playing. And so basically what I do is I apply to Millwall, and John said to me, great, it's Gordon. He said, you know, we know all about you. It's great. But what we're doing is we're virtually going to go with the manager that's got sacked. And that's the name of the game, you know. This is the only game where you get the sack and you get a better job.
And
trying to get onto that roundabout on the managerial side is very difficult, because it seems that when you fall off, there's a hand to bring you back on. And I find that. But Millwall, I wish Ian Holloway all the very best of luck, because you've got to down at Millwall. They're very, very demanding supporters. There may not be as many as Man United, but by gum, do they want? Do they demand? You know, they demand everything. And then you look at Derby County, they're having a resurgence in the Championship. But if you looked at Chelsea when they played them in the Cup the other day, you looked at the difference between the Championship and the Premiership. And they're yards apart, they're streets apart. And, you know, I wish Steve McLaren all the very best of luck. But, you know, football's football. You know, you're hired to be fired. You know, the best thing is that what we always talk about is when the chairman gives you a pat on the back and he says he backs you, get ready to pack a suitcase because you're gone.
the dreaded vote of approval from the board, I think that's called. Yeah,
that's
good.
Exactly right. As the chairman said to me once, he said, oh, we want to get out of the division. So I said, no problem, Mr. Chairman. So I took him down a division. to the next division.
Oh, we're straight out of that horrible division we were in last season. Yeah, no,
I know. Worry. Yeah, we're down to the next one.
I tell you what,
I said to the chairman, I said, you know, with our luck, Damon, I said we could get stranded on a desert island and get picked up by the Titanic.
Well, Gordon,
it's true though, isn't it? It's true. I mean, it's football. You know, we're talking about Man U because they're the biggest club. If David had lost four or five games at Everton, we wouldn't be talking about it. Because we don't put Everton in the same bracket as Man United. And that to me tells me, you know, the state of the Premiership, where you've got the team struggling at the bottom to fight each other. Mediocre teams are quite happy to get a result, two or three wins, maybe a few losses. And then you've got the creme de la creme at the top there that say if we lose three or four games, forget about the league. That's been pretty well much the same forever. But it's the same teams, and it's a funny, but there's a cycle. A top club has a little bit of a downer. Another big club comes in. Another club comes in. And you just look at it and say it's football. And if you look at it as well, the World Cup is the same. One year it could be the flavour of the month, Germany. So everybody starts to learn the German style. And then the next 4 years, Spain don't win it and say, oh, we better go to artists. You know. And then the next year we look and say, OK, fine, Italy have won it. OK, we'll play some boring football. And what it does, it goes in cycles, it goes in patterns. But what doesn't go away is the players that excite me, players with incentives, players that show me what they can do, players that go out there and are quality players. I mean, I'm not a Suarez fan. Basically, the guy certainly knows where the target is.
That's something that
we haven't got at Old Trafford. Danny might be a great goal scorer at getting some of the other goals, but Suarez is an assassin when he's in front of goal. And I think that portrays, that's why Brendan Rodgers has stuck by him. to so the game to me is a very, you know, the game to me, and it's the same all over the world. It's the same all over the world. You know, that's why top strikers are worth their weight in gold. And if you've got one, keep them as long as you can until the big clubs come in, but then capitalize on them. I mean, that's why defenders don't get the notoriety and the forwards get everything, because they're the guys that you put a ball in the net, you work your weight in gold. If you don't, that's it. You say goodnight. And, you know, and there aren't a lot of top strikers around. And if what they are, they're a lot of money. And yet the problem being is that at Man United, who do we look for? Who do you go for? We missed out on Ozil. Mm. We should have known that Ozil, I mean, I would have walked up the road to get Ozil. I think he's a great player. Why? Number one, he's got German mentality. The way they play, the way they train, the way they put things in, and he's making moves left, right, and centre. Wouldn't have gone for Fabregas. Yeah, why? You know, we needed to know, and I think David needs to know who the top people are at this moment to go in, buy, and say, right, okay, fine, this is what we've got to do. And once he starts to do that, I think then we might see a change. But I do hope so. I keep my fingers crossed. I mean, the reason I keep my fingers crossed is because I'm tired of Man United losing, because my dog getting kicked up the backside every time. And she's tired of it. She's got a sore butt. she goes away from me when Man United's on the telly.
She hears the scores coming in.
She goes in the other room. She says, I'm not going anywhere near him. Oh. I am disappointed. I'm not. I know. Football is, as the old quote says, it's a funny old game. Your ups and downs, you take it. Supporters will come at you. I mean, I did a Talk Sport radio program for London, and Talk Sport turned around and said, "Can we delay it?" I said, "Why?" He said, "Well, we've got so many West Ham supporters following up after that 6-0 drubbing." And I went, "Yeah, take as many as you like." So, you know, the thing about football is, and I think a lot of people, you've got to smile and you've got to laugh at yourself as well when you're doing it. Mm. You know, when you're watching the game, you've got to smile. Not everything's rosy. One minute you're up, you know, as I said, one minute you can be a hero and the next minute you can be a bum. And that is football. And that's what is the beautiful, beautiful game of football.
Gordon, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show today. We've had almost, far longer than we could have even dreamed of you being on the show with us today, mate. And we will let you get back to your book. But we honestly, from everybody here, appreciate it so much, the time that you've spent with us today.
Anybody that's looking, any MLS team's looking for a coach, manager, just get in touch.
We will we will definitely spread your name out to our contacts around the business. That's for sure, Gordon. And
that's very kind of you. Thank you very much. And then once I finish my book, then we can have a laugh. It's 365 pages.
Oh, I'll be able to get through that in a couple of days.
Oh, well,
of dedicated.
No, 364 of photos, and there's one page of writing.
That's my kind of book.
And there's some colour by numbers.
we'll make sure to keep it between the lines, that's for sure, then, Gordon. Yeah. We'll do it nice and neat for you.
That'd be fantastic, that. Absolutely brilliant.
Oh, thank you so much, Gordon. It's been an absolute pleasure as always, mate. And we very much look forward to reading your book as well when it does hit the shelves, mate.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Gordon Hill,
X-Man. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well, man. Happy New Year.
Okay.
Bye now.
Okay, bye.
Gordon Hill joining us there on World Football Daily, the former Manchester United, Derby County, Queen's Park Rangers, Millwall player, six-time England cap winner, and just an all-round fantastic bloke as well. Thoroughly enjoyed chatting with him. We definitely need to have him more on the show more often. What a breakdown of Manchester United's problems. You know, pretty much summed it all up in that kind of 15-minute spell when he was discussing the problems with Moyes, with Ferguson, with the squad in general. Just fantastic, fantastic. The best, one of the best guests that we have on World Football Daily. Thanks very much there to Gordon Hill for joining us here on World Football Daily, giving us his thoughts on, is it a crisis, I guess, or not at Manchester United? I will let you guys be the judge of that. United dominating our headlines for a lot of this week. And Gordon giving us his insight as an ex-pro on, obviously, all things United and a bit of the Premier League coming up. And I guess with the Premier League coming up, we should dive straight into something that I've missed for a very long time now. Joining me, as always, is Rafa. And Raf, let's just get straight into a little bit of IKT Sizzle, my man.
I can do that. You know me. I'm always up for a little bit of IKT.
Well, we haven't done it for a long time, and you know, I do enjoy a bit of IKTS whenever I can do it. And I think the trouble is that I don't forget about it, but I just end up getting distracted and doing other stuff on a Friday, and normally, yeah, and especially over the Christmas period, like I wasn't updating it very often.
Because you always push it off till Friday, right? Like, yeah. I mean, if you're good, I think you almost have to. You know, you kind of need to take in.
Well, any late counts. Injuries coming up in training, right, and stuff like that. You know, you don't want to find out that Rooney's suddenly taken a knock in training, which changes the whole scape of United's game against Swansea, for instance, this weekend. But without a further ado, Ref, let's get down and dirty in a little bit of the score predictions in the opening game of the weekend. Unfortunately, actually, Ref, I'm going to be missing a lot of these games.
Hold on, whoa. Since we haven't done this in a while, a couple things have changed. For example, what is this Selco? What's the difference between the old predictor and this new Selco predictor? Is it the same thing? Do you not get that?
Oh yeah, I got an update for that, but I'm just logged into the IKTS, my man. I'm not faffing around with this Selco thing. I'm just logged into IKTS.
Fair enough. Okay, I got distracted by it. I've got a couple emails on this, and I don't know. Just it's different. It looks like a different banner.
Let's get down and dirty with the original.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
The original and favourite, my man. Kicking off the weekend, Hull take on Chelsea. Chelsea travelling north up to Hull in the early kickoff this Saturday. Chelsea on a very good run of form, 4 wins from their last 5, and that draw at the Emirates, 0-0 draw, of course. Mourinho has his team plodding further and further up the table. 2 points off top, a win against Hull on the road would be no mean feat in whatsoever. And I've got this one being a Chelsea 2-0 win.
2-0 is what I have as well. That was my best Jose Mourinho impression. I won't do that again. I'm sorry, but I hate to agree. It seems pretty straightforward for that. The only reason why I don't think it's going to be like a 6, a 7, something like a Man City is because that's not Jose's style. So 2-0, yeah, I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, I think they'll take it comfortably. They'll kind of cruise their way in. 2-0 win for Chelsea to kick off the weekend. Next up on the agenda for the Premier League this weekend, Cardiff take on West Ham. Big battle at the bottom of the league. If Sam Allardyce loses, I guess if West Ham lose, the real question is, rather than the scoreline, does Sam go after this loss?
Sure.
For Shaw?
Sure. You know, I mean, I'm actually going to pay attention to this game. One, because of Ole, and two, because of Big Sam. I do kind of feel for Sam. I don't know why, but I am kind of pulling for West Ham on this one. I would like to see a 1-0 away win just so it kind of gets them back on track. They had a really kind of tough, obviously, you know, run of form recently. They were shellacked in midweek. And that's tough because you also see the chairman and the owner kind of trying to back Sam, you know, like they want to, but it does look dire straits. I'm going to give them the 1-0 away win. Come on, West Ham.
Yeah, all the teams at the moment, I want Norwich, Cardiff and Palace down from the Premier League come the end of the season. So I'd like West Ham and Sunderland to pull it out of the bag a bit. So I'm going to go with a 2-1 West Ham win on the road against Cardiff. Everton take on Norwich. Norwich, another struggler that some people are just watching slip and slide down that table. Just 1 win in their last 5, 3 draws and 2 losses. And of course, a draw in their last outing against Crystal Palace. Everton, on the other hand, looking to maintain their form up towards the top of the table and keep that 1-point gap on Liverpool at least come the end of this week, and hope that Liverpool stumble against Stoke away from home. I'm going to go with a big 3-0 win, Everton.
I had this before. Are we doing the same thing? I do have it 3-0. I was worried you know, about maybe giving Norwich the away goal, you know, the away goal, the one goal. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think that Everton are just kind of, you know, in fine form and feeling it. So, 3-0.
It's one of the Toffees. One of the best defenses in the league as well. They're not going to concede to Norwich. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's, again, that's why I have your results. So, 3-0.
Another big battle at the bottom. Fulham take on Sunderland. It's a big relegation weekend this weekend. This could arguably be a six-pointer, were it maybe kind of 10, 11 weeks down the line or so. Fulham against Sunderland at Craven Cottage. It's normally a difficult place to go, but with rumours of Berbatov potentially departing this January and the fact that Fulham have been pretty shoddy this year, taking on a Sunderland side that Gus Poyet is believing and keeps telling us is going from strength to strength. I don't see it yet, but that big win, obviously, over Manchester United in midweek will have done nothing apart from improve the confidence around that squad. I am going to go with a 2-1 win Sunderland on the road.
See, this is what happens, is you just said it. It is kind of a battle at the bottom. It could be a very big potential six-pointer, like, you know, we hope and expect. Unfortunately, when this kind of happens, I feel like this is going to be a draw. I've got this 1-1. I would rather see Fulham take all 3 points and kind of bury Sunderland a little bit more. I care nothing for Sunderland. I know you said you wanted them to stay up. I don't. I would like to see Sunderland, Norwich, and Crystal Palace go down. That'd be just fine with me. I kind of have a soft spot for West Ham and West Brom. So maybe it's just because I'm from the West Coast of the United States. So I am going with a 1-1 draw. Sorry.
That's as bad as Matt liking Lionel Messi yesterday because he was about as tall as him. Then the short men kind of sticking together and preferring Messi over Ronaldo because of that.
And they are many. Trust me. I could also say that, you know, I have a softer spot for Fulham because I've been to one of the games, literally on the end line, for a brilliant kind of...
I'm sorry, what, on the end line?
Yeah.
I this is an American term. Are we talking the byline? Like, yes. Right behind, you know, the
right
keeper?
Right behind the goalkeeper,
yeah,
yes.
All right, okay, well, the byline then, the end line. Come on, Ralph. Next you'll be calling it an upper 90 shot. I'm having none of that.
Okay. That was bad. But
or scoring in the five hole. Oh,
you're coming off as a little bit of a Eurostar.
Yeah, I know.
No, I'm just joking. Don't worry. You were perfectly correct in calling me out on that, and that's fine.
So, obviously,
I've been to one of their games. They came through big time for me with a 2-1 victory while I was there at the byline behind Mark Schwarzer. I obviously, there's been the American connection to Fulham. So trust me, again, Juice, I have my reasons, man.
All right. You got your reasons. So with your allegiance to clubs with West in them, though, does that mean in our next game you're going to go with West Brom beating Southampton down at St Mary's? New manager Pepe Mel, as I said earlier in the show, taking on the Baggies for the first time after he initially, or well, the two parties weren't able to agree about a week ago or so, and then Pepe Mel deciding that he is going to take the job at West Bromwich Albion, by the way. It's just a big shame, because I've been, you know, Keith Downing hasn't said that he wanted the job in any way, shape or form. He said he wanted to be a temporary manager of West Bromwich Albion, but I think it's a shame that he's not been didn't want to take the job on, because he had that side really battling and working well for him, and it shows that by the fixtures that they had and not losing a game during that spell. But Pepe Mel takes the reins of West Bromwich Albion down at Southampton. So yeah, are you going for a West Brom win, Raph?
No. I
love teams with West in them. I always support them, except West Brom against Southampton.
Well, and my reason would be because of my fourth grade, elementary school teacher. So, he was a huge Southampton fan. Again, that's why I always give, you know, love to the Saints when I can. I'm almost feeling a draw on this, just because maybe a little bit of the new manager bump, but it is West Brom. So I'm just going to say 2-1 Southampton. 2-1 Southampton.
Yeah, the Baggies are so unpredictable this season. They can come out firing. They can come out and be so squalid. Rumours still that Shane Long could be going to Hull City this January, although I really liked Steve Bruce coming out and actually apologising to both Sunderland and to West Brom, saying, look, we haven't made bids. We really hope and we apologise for the press stirring things up, and we don't want to disrupt your sides in any way, shape or form. Steve Bruce, the whole manager, coming out as a very classy man with that. But I think down at St Mary's, Southampton strong at home, going with a 2-0 win for the Saints. It will be against West Brom. Pepe Mel, new manager coming in, but also, you know, foreign manager maybe. I know there's a lot of people in Birmingham that aren't a big fan and wanted an English coach, a British coach to take on the job. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see what happens with the Baggies in the second half of the season. But they're going to lose 2-0 at St Mary's. Another clean sheet is going to come as well for Tottenham against Crystal Palace. I'm going 3-0. Pulis's side's normally very hard to break down, but I'm going with Tottenham under Sherwood. Adebayor, he's going to score 4. Well, no, he won't, but it will be a 3-0 win for Tottenham.
Well, I mean, look, I've had my mind filled out for a while, but I have 3-0 as well, just because Palace are just going down. And you'd like to think that Tottenham are feeling somewhat on a high, you know, under new manager Tim Sherwood. You know, they are finding the back of the net again. And I'm with you. I think Adebayor kind of picks on the people who are easy to pick on, I guess.
He's gonna
bully around the Crystal Palace back line.
Haven't lost in the league under Tim Sherwood just yet, so he's doing a pretty decent job at the moment. Struggling Manchester United, we spoke about this with Gordon earlier on the show.
Yep.
Take on Swansea at Old Trafford to repeat the opening day of the season, where United dominated down in Wales. Danny Welbeck scoring that wonderful lob on the opening day of the season. So much was surrounding Rooney's future then, and it still does now, with Mourinho saying he thinks that he could get Rooney come the end of the season, but not this January. United taking on Swansea, though. Swansea at Old Trafford just did it recently in the FA Cup. Will they do a repeat of that in the league this weekend?
You know what? I do see it's probably going to be a draw. I've got it down as a 2-1 Swansea win, and it just kind of, you know, pushes a couple more handfuls of United fans off the bandwagon, just because they're not real wholehearted, you know, United fans. And I bet you, I wanted to talk to you about this a little bit later, but just the general kind of sadness that's going to come when Manchester United don't win a championship, and all the people that are going to suddenly turn off their soccer, you know, for a while until Manchester United go back, just because that's the only team they know and that's the only team that they were willing to kind of follow and pay attention to and get their soccer news from. I fear for that, but thankfully there's a World Cup.
I touched on it earlier in the show about Chris Smalling, and I think that is probably, this week is probably about as low as United will go this season. I don't think they can go any lower, and that's why I've got them down to get a 2-1 win against Swansea at Old Trafford in the late game on Saturday. Moving into Sunday's two encounters, and two really enticing encounters when you think about it. Newcastle, who, you know, Pardew, under pressure in the early part of the season, now suddenly has them up into eighth place. Two straight losses, though. They'll be looking to bounce back and hope that Manchester City's poor away form comes back into play again. But after the demolition job in midweek on West Ham and the five straight wins in the Premier League, City against Newcastle at St James's Park is sure to be a cracker. And I'm going with a 4-1 Newcastle away win.
You mean
City away win. Yeah. A 4-1 Man City away win.
The good thing is that I don't have your same score, but I do. I mean, 4-0 or 4-1, whatever. That's very, very possible. I was very close myself to putting that. Instead, I put 3-1. And it really is just a matter of who is going to want it that day, because all those, you know, it depends on the lineup. I was going to say, like, oh, it depends on the lineup, because, you know, some of those players might not be first teamers. Well, those people who are on the bench for Man City, better than most, you know, could be starting in just about any other side in the Premier League today. So with that said, all those players who do get the chance to play this weekend are either going to be trying to, well, they want to be playing in the Champions League. They're going to be kind of making their push to make sure that they're in that starting lineup. I know it's kind of far away right now, Juice, but I think this is a nice kind of a nice week for Man City and its players to to showcase that they're really ready to step up and face Barcelona come Champions League time next or in February.
And I would be scared if I was Barca about how Man City are playing at this moment in time. The other game on Sunday, Liverpool going away to Stoke City at the Britannia. Difficult place to go historically. Not as difficult, though, with Mark Hughes in charge, really. Liverpool, though, you know, they're a side that can be hit and miss at points. They can look fantastic one week and then can look okay the next. Suarez has just picked up the Player of the Month award for December, and I've got Liverpool still to be able to get the job done under Brendan Rodgers at the Britannia. A 2-0 win on the road for Liverpool.
See, I've got 2-1 for Liverpool. I think that, you know, it'll be somewhat difficult for them to get through, you know, get through and get 3 points. I almost had them down as like a 1-1 draw, but I feel like they, you know, they definitely have a talent and they have enough to get by Stoke. They should. And that's why I have it 2-1 for Liverpool.
And finally, finishing off the weekend on Monday Night Football, Aston Villa take on Arsenal, a repeat of the opening day fixture, of course. And it's going to be a tough one for Villa against an Arsenal side that must be looking behind them, seeing City breathing down their necks along with Chelsea, and thinking they can't afford to stumble anywhere. No Theo Walcott for Arsene Wenger, which means that there should be some spending from him this January. He says that he's far more likely to bring in another forward with Walcott out. Do they get the job done without Theo, though, against Villa, a side that toppled them, remember, down at the Emirates on the opening day of the season?
Look, I have my safety on this call, but I'm going with a 1-1 draw for this one. And I was going to say for Villa, because, I mean, that would be stupendous for them.
That is a draw for Villa, really, isn't it, at this point in time? Yeah.
If they could get a point from this match, I think they would be extremely happy. And I also think that, you know, I'm expecting Arsenal to kind of stumble. I mean, I'm not an Arsenal supporter, so I mean, you can kind of attack me if you want, Arsenal supporters. I get that, but I just don't, you know, I don't have faith that Arsenal are going to be at the top of the table at the end of the season. They're going to have to stumble somewhere. I could see Villa being a perfect stumbling block for them. I have my safety on this, but I think this is going to be a draw for them. They're going to be complaining about, you know, Theo and what it's done to the immediate impact on the team, but they will recover. They will kind of, you know, they'll make excuses like they do. But eventually, you know, they'll end up top four and they'll be happy about it.
Talking out of your behind here, Rafa, it's going to be a 3-0 Arsenal win. Villa are sluggish, they're poor at the back still at the moment, and they still don't have a playmaker in the heart of their midfield. Benteke's not firing, Cossack's out for a long time with his broken leg. This is going to be a very difficult second half of the season. We know Benteke's a second half of the season player, showed that last year, but it's going to be a very difficult second half of the season for Lambert. He could be another managerial casualty come the end of this year, and I do think that we're going to see Arsenal get a 3-0 win at Villa Park on Monday Night Football.
Yeah, that would be, I think you're probably just a little bit more upset at Villa, because, you know, you do a lot of Villa games. You know, I think you'd like to get behind Villa.
Yeah, but this is me giving Arsenal a 3-0 win. Like, you have to take that factor in account as well. At any possible point, I will try and undermine Arsene Wenger and say, no, they won't do it. They're not going to get 3 points this time. They're not going to get through. But this one is nailed onto the wall. If it was a 3x multiplier, I'd be putting my banker on that. Instead, that's on Everton to beat Norwich.
Really?
But yeah, that's 3 points in the bag, my mates.
Oh, I didn't see it being a three-pointer, but I went with the Tottenham result for my banker.
Let's take a quick run round elsewhere around Europe and the fixtures coming up. Friday night, tonight, Borussia Mönchengladbach take on Bayern Munich. Saturday in the Bundesliga, see Stuttgart taking on Mainz. Dortmund take on Augsburg. Lewandowski apparently is going to be hiring bodyguards to look after him to stop angry Dortmund fans from turning on him after he has agreed and signed with Bayern Munich this January. Freiburg take on Leverkusen. Nürnberg take on Hoffenheim. Wolfsburg take on Hannover, and Frankfurt take on Hertha Berlin, who are having a stellar season up in sixth at the moment, Hertha Berlin. And on Sunday, Werder Bremen take on Braunschweig, and Hamburg take on Schalke. Ligue 1 action, we have Montpellier taking on Monaco, the Cinderella story that was Montpellier, taking on the Ligue 1 new kings, or potential kings, should I say, of Monaco. Will Falcao be around after January? We will find out on February the 1st, I guess. Then on Saturday, Ajaccio take on PSG, Bordeaux take on Toulouse, Guingamp take on Saint-Étienne. Lyon take on Sochaux, Rennes take on Nice, and Valenciennes take on Bastia, and then on Sunday with Nantes, Lorient, Evian against Marseille, and Lille take on Reims. In La Liga, we have Granada against Valladolid, Atletico Bilbao on Saturday take on Almeria, Celta Vigo take on Valencia, and the big one, Atletico Madrid take on Barca on Saturday evening, which is followed by Elche against Sevilla, and then on Sunday Getafe take on Rayo Vallecano, Real Betis take on Osasuna, Espanyol take on Real Madrid, and Levante take on Malaga. I love it how they have Barca against Atletico and Espanyol against Madrid on the same weekends. Like every year it happens that way. I think that's such a nice, because it's like the Clásicos, you know, are Atletico going to help out Real by beating Barca, you know, it's... I think it's really nice the way that seems to fall out every single year. And Serie A, of course, on Saturday, Livorno take on Parma, Bologna take on Lazio, and then Sunday, Torino take on Fiorentina, Roma, Genoa, Verona take on Napoli. That could be a very entertaining tie indeed, with Verona still flying high up in fifth place in Serie A. Cagliari take on Juventus, Atalanta take on Catania, and then Sassuolo in the evening on Sunday host AC Milan, a Milan side that are looking to bring in Michael Essien. And then Monday night football from Italy, Sampdoria take on Udinese and Inter take on Chievo. And that Sampdoria-Udinese game is the game, repeat of last year's fixture, which saw one sole Udinese fan turn up. I think it was on a Wednesday night to Sampdoria's stadium to watch Udinese play. Was the only fan in the away end, and he got given a Sampdoria shirt by the home fans and was introduced to the Udinese team after the game for being the only fan that went down there, because he was apparently on a business meeting down in Genoa that night and thought he might as well go along and support his beloved Udinese. Great story, that one, from last year. One of my favourite footballer fan stories that we've heard in a while. Michael Essien to AC Milan. We saw them bringing, obviously, Nigel de Jong. Raft, Essien's not the player he was. He can still do a job. It's a nice little loan signing just to bolster that midfield and try and stop it from being so leaky. It's very similar, I think, to Zdenek Zeman's Roma last year, is that the midfield's taking none of the pressure off the back four at Milan. What do you make of Essien? I'm as a Milan fan, I'm not ecstatic, but I'm okay with this. I'm happy with this.
Yeah. No, Essien, I think that he's still got probably another two solid years, you know, where he can really kind of run that midfield, shut it down like he needs to, and support where possible. Didn't you guys just sign Keisuke Honda as well?
Yeah, we just brought in Honda, which is we all knew was going to happen for a very long time. And
he said,
did you hear his ridiculous statement? He said, yeah, I can see success with Milan. You know, I want the Champions League, I'm thinking. I'm like, you're coming into a side that are, you know, struggling domestically down in 11th place in Serie A. And they're the only Italian side in the Champions League at the moment.
Also,
but did you not see the group? Like, come on, mate.
Oh, he's also got his own kind of like logo going on too, which is pretty cool. It's got like the number 10.
I don't like that. Players
silhouette,
with their own,
yeah, whatever. Yeah. Okay. I actually think that they'll probably link up pretty nicely, and I think that's they're both kind of nice additions to the squad. A level of maturity, a level of experience that they might need. And can really come in handy kind of the second half of the Serie A season in particular. Was it going to help in the Champions League juice? Probably not. I'm sorry. You guys might be going out very soon. But on a plus, you will get some great support, and you will potentially be playing again next season as long as you guys play your cards right and take the second half of the Serie A season seriously.
What have you made, by the way, as well, from more news from Serie A, and of course Michael Bradley's transfer from Roma being confirmed? That was we retweeted something last night on our Twitter page of Roma saying thank you very much to Michael Bradley, which I thought was a really smart act considering he was only there for a year and a half, but still very classy of
Is it just Italians who do that kind of thing? You know, you saw it with the...
I don't know. The Man City fans put out that advert in the local Manchester paper saying thanks very much, Mancini, didn't they?
Right.
So I don't know. There's no beef. That's the thing. Bradley's not leaving because, you know, he's a disgraced player, or Roma see him as like totally surplus to requirements. I think they understand that Major League Soccer want to bring him back for the reasons that we discussed earlier in the week. And
$10 million, I believe it is.
Yeah,
$10 million.
Isn't that lowballing slightly? A player of Bradley's quality for $6.7 million. There's plenty of Premier League sides that would have probably paid a lot more. To bring Bradley in and anchor their midfield. Southampton, for instance, with Wanyama being kind of out over injury at points this season, I think they'd have loved to have brought in somebody like Bradley to also bolster the defensive part of their midfield, because when Wanyama plays, they look a lot better and a lot stronger. When he doesn't, they look a little leaky. Now, put Bradley and Wanyama in there together, that's a fantastic 1-2 punch in the holding midfield positions in the Premier League. And for $6.7 million, it's a bit of a steal. Major League Soccer's pulled off another one. I mean, Dempsey didn't go for that much, did he? What is it with returning US players and Major League Soccer being able to bargain it down to pretty much nothing in modern day transfer terms? $6.7 million.
Yeah, I don't know, Juice. That's it's kind of that way that they do that whole collective bargaining, and it's strange. It's strange.
It's interesting as well that Rudy Garcia said that Bradley wanted to leave. We cannot keep hold of a player who doesn't want to be here. It's a pity, and I understand he wanted more playing time, but it's difficult to get space in our midfield. We wish him all the best in his new adventure. The fact that Bradley wanted to go, it's what we were talking about the other day, is that it's kind of disappointing that we didn't see him fight for more playing time for, you know, another half season or so, maybe leave in the summer. Instead, was happy to kind of go off to Toronto.
Yeah. No, I mean, that is concerning. That statement in particular was a bit, you know, I caught that, Juice, because, you know, I like to think that he wanted to stay and fight for a spot, you know, make a name for his own, you know, kind of in really what is, in my opinion, a legendary, you know, club. You know, I think anybody can tell you that, you know, or yeah, if you're the slightest bit familiar with the top flight of Italian football, I think you probably know of Roma, or I've heard of them before. It's also the capital of that country.
Italy. Italy's the country you're trying to think. They're also the capital of that place.
Country. Yeah. So with that said, I mean, I did kind of, I mean, maybe I just pictured him being more steadfast, a little more hard-headed and wanting to make it abroad,
well,
make it,
and I don't know
somewhere.
If this is like stereotypical or anything like that, Raf, but everybody, like when I've spoken to Americans about kind of where they'd like to go in Europe, a lot of it's like, oh, I'd love to go to London, Paris, Rome. You know, it's one of the, for Americans traveling, it's one of the like top three cities that I think that Americans seem to want to go to. And it would only
when I went, that was part of my trip, London, Paris, Rome. I think I threw in Florence and Venice.
Yeah, you want to go to these places. And sure. And that almost kind of is great for Bradley to be somewhere like that, because people say, hey, while we're here, we could go and see that US men's national team player, Michael Bradley, for Roma, because we're in Rome. Like, I don't know, it seemed to go really nice together. But we do wish him the best of luck in Toronto and hope that this deal does pay off for all the right reasons for all involved. Another quick thing, if you're going to watch Sassuolo against AC Milan this weekend, don't be worried if it looks pretty barren in the away end, with a lack of flares, fireworks, and general offensive banter that Italian football fans tend to bring. The AC Milan ultras are boycotting this game because of overly expensive ticket prices. They've got a little bit more heart than Man City fans that are willing to still pay £62 to go and watch their side at the Emirates. But AC Milan fans willing to take that stance and say, no, we are not going because of the inflated ticket price. But I think that's the right thing.
Yeah, you've heard about the Bayern thing, right? I'm sure you've talked about it. But, I mean, yeah, pat on the back to the Bayern Munich fans who get their Champions League away tickets subsidized by the club. Wow.
Yeah, this is Germany once again proving just how much better they are than everybody else when it comes to how they treat their fans and showcase the league in general. It's
how they win stuff.
It's so depressingly disheartening that this club that you just want to hate so much, and then they start doing so many nice things for their fans. Oh, you want a cheap season ticket? Oh, can you imagine being an English person that didn't really know anything about German football and going up to the Allianz? You've moved to Germany, and it's like, oh God, yeah, okay, let's go for one game. How much are you willing to pay? Oh, I guess like, you know, €100 max we'll pay, £60 to go to one game. You know, let's do that. All right, can we have just, you know, what tickets can you get for €100, mate? Are there any available? Is there anything? Oh, yeah, we have this season ticket, yeah? What?
What?
Yeah, this season ticket.
Wasn't it you, Juice? Or, I don't know, somebody told me that they were thinking about buying a season ticket to, you know, for Bayern Munich.
I think, to be honest, if I was earning, and
flying back and forth a couple
times. If I was earning enough money, I would contemplate doing that. I really would contemplate. Or taking the train or whatever, you know, you'd be able to enjoy a few weekends in Munich. Guaranteed tickets for the Dortmund game and for any of the other big games in German football. Obviously, there are a lot of decent sides that you want to go and see. Schalke, for instance, who bring fantastic fans away from home from them. You want to go and see Hamburg. I think that'd be, you know, if you've got a spare weekend, why not go off and watch a bit of Bundesliga football? And then you can kind of sell the season ticket on a weekly basis on ticket websites and probably make your money back. You know, it's more of an investment than anything else, buying a season ticket at Bayern Munich. It could be a successful business investment. Why not, Raf? But I'm unfortunately very busy this weekend. I'll tell you what, quickly before we go, mate, I have started off my weekend in such a good way today. We've of course had a fantastic show here on World Football Daily on the Friday show. I'm full of confidence that I'm going to kick the living hell out of you and IKTS on the scores that we have differed on, which there aren't many of them this week, that's for sure. But I kicked off my Friday with a 10-mile sprint on the bike around the local countryside. I've got my game prep done. I've got three games I'm doing this weekend. And I'm also catching up with a very old friend of mine who I haven't seen for a very long time as well. Plus, all the cracking football that's on, the NFL playoffs as well. I can sit back and watch it as a fan without thinking, God, I hope the Eagles crush you at some point. And I can just sit back and laugh at Philip Rivers, which I hope that we can all do in our weekend.
Oh, wait. I have a quick email. I'm very, very sorry, man. There was somebody, oh, geez, where is it? Somebody who wrote in about yesterday's
the Olympics
show. No, the show. Okay, here it is. It's this is from Dan in DC. He says, "Brilliant show, guys. Let me say that first off. Couple things. Number one, Ollie, Xavier is pronounced Xavier, not like a South American or Spanish Xavier."
All right.
And what was Joseph Sexton doing in the background of the interview? Disposing of a body or something? Great show again, Dan and DC.
I have no idea what was going on with Joseph in the background, but he gave us the fantastic content as always out of the mouth, as opposed to what was going on in behind the scenes, which, you know, we can't see Joseph. Maybe he was disposing of a body, although that is not a rumor that I want to have start kind of going around football journalism, that Joseph Sexton, whilst he's performing interviews, is also hacking up bodies like something out of Breaking Bad or something like that.
Right.
A big thanks to everybody that emailed, of course. A big thanks to UVJ as well, whose emails we read out earlier on in the start of the show. Big thanks to everybody who's come on the show this week, who's got involved in the abhorrent amount of twittering that we've done over the last few days on the World Football Daily account. Remember, show at worldfootballdaily.com is where to get in contact with us, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and the Facebook page as well. Just search in World Football Daily, you'll find us there, and you can give us all your answers to our wonderful questions that we pose to you, the great and knowledgeable football fans. We're going to leave it there for Friday's edition of the show. We will be back after the weekend, same time as always on Monday, bringing you our first part of our review of the weekend's action. There's been plenty to get through, and there's still Monday night football from Serie A and England coming up as well. Have a cracking weekend. Enjoy the football. A big thanks to you guys, as always, for listening. Take care. Have a great one, and we will see you in just a couple of days' time. Oh, sweet England, we'll be with you. You know.